Good evening. It's Tuesday, September 28th, 2004, and I'd like to welcome those who are with us to Tuesday Topics. Tuesday Topics takes place in the politics room of the Our Place voice chat community, which is part of the ACB radio website. It's made available to us through the good offices of Talking Communities, and we very much appreciate their kindness in making these rooms available to us. Tonight, we'll be exploring a fairly exciting topic. Over the past couple of weeks, we've been taking a look at the certification of professionals who work in the field of blindness. And tonight, we're going to take a look at a specific category of professionals, ones for whom certification at this point does not exist. That is, the certification of people who provide training in access technology. The question is, should such people be certified? And if they should be certified, what kind of certification should we use? Who should be responsible for certification? And how much should access technology specialists actually know in order to be deemed to be competent as instructors? Is it enough for an access technology person to know one set of software, or does that person need to know more? Who's responsible for doing the certification? Should that certification be provided by access technology vendors, or should the certification be provided by some kind of independent entity? And, perhaps, at the core, an even more important question, what makes people hire certified employees? If an agency can get an uncertified employee for considerably less, what prevents them from actually hiring those uncertified folks? Ought there to be university programs in access technology with specific emphasis on blindness? And if there ought to be, are there any? And if there are any, where are they? So, bottom line, there are loads of questions. We have four other people with us at the moment, and I think to begin with some comments, I'm going to invite the person on our program tonight who is probably the most expert on this subject, Mr. Brian Charlson, who is director of the Access Technology element of the Carroll Center in Boston, Massachusetts, to provide us with some initial thoughts on the subject of certification of access technology. So, Brian, I hope I've left you enough questions to begin to respond to. Go for it.
Giving a bit of my credentials to begin with, I run the Carroll Center Computer Training Services Program. I supervise 3 full-time instructors and 3 part-time instructors, and spent 18 years in the classroom myself as an adaptive technology instructor. There are a number of different issues associated with this rather sticky kind of question. It's very much a chicken and the egg scenario as far as I'm concerned. That is, before you can begin requiring that individuals be certified, you have to create a structure that, one, can allow an individual to achieve a level of training that is accepted as a certifying kind of process. 2, you have to create the certification process itself, including validating its efficacy. And 3, you have to convince those who are the decision makers, who decide whether to hire one individual or another, that having an individual certified is a value-added kind of thing. Because there is a cost to the certification process. It's a cost in terms of the individual getting the necessary training and thereby foregoing opportunities to sell their services during that time frame. They'll probably have to pay somebody to give them that initial training, and they'll have to pay a fee to underwrite the cost of the certification process. Currently, the vast number of individuals who are currently acting as adaptive technology instructors are doing so without a degree that's associated with the task they're performing. That is, they're not professional educators. They are not individuals who have degrees in computer science. They're frequently individuals who have found themselves to be the only one they knew who really understood and cared about them. And they moved on to becoming instructors, the same way that it happened in the public school system, where math and science teachers rapidly became computer instructors as that transition process took place. So I would say that we need to begin the discussion by saying, one, who ought to be doing the training of trainers? Is there a system out there for doing it? And if there isn't one, who ought to be responsible for its creation? I would suggest to you that, in fact, that there are some systems out for doing this, but they are cross-disability. And cross-disability training frequently means that the training you get on blindness-specific related issues becomes a very small portion of the full curriculum. I point, for example, to the California State Northridge program that tours the country. I sent one of my trainers to that training, and when they came back, they said that out of the 5 days of training, they spent approximately 2 to 4 hours on access training for blind and visually impaired persons, something she was going to spend all of her time doing. So I open up the door there. Ought it to be a university system that does the training? Ought it to be entities that are already trainers themselves training others? That's the question I would put before the group.
Thank you, Brian. That's a good introduction. So let's explore that. Ought we to have a kind of a pre-service training program for folks who are blind and visually impaired in access technology with special emphasis on blindness? And is it possible for such a program to actually operate? I don't know. Let me open it up and see who wants to comment on that. It's a question posed by Brian, and let's see what kind of responses we get. And if you would, just identify yourself and tell us where you're from this first time around.
This is Debbie Grubb from Bradenton, Florida, and I came here tonight primarily to learn because I am a computer person that needs a lot of instruction. If something is explained to me step by step how to do it, I can do just fine. So my feeling is that we need people to be certified so that we can make sure that bad habits aren't started, that misinformation isn't put out there. One of my best friends, when I lived in Nashville, received Windows training and training in JAWS from somebody that was paid by the Nashville, Tennessee Division of Rehabilitation Services. I forget what they call theirs now, but that's what it was. And this person taught her, gave her all kinds of misinformation and taught her awkward ways to get in and out of applications and that kind of thing. And a lot of this stuff had to be unlearned, and a good friend of ours who also teaches this kind of thing and also isn't certified not only taught my friend Pam but taught me what little bit we know about the Windows and JAWS environments. So speaking as somebody who needs to be led by the hand and to be really helped a lot as I learn the different realms of the computer world, I would say yes, that we do need to have certification. But I agree with Brian, just like we have said in conversations that we've had out here in the past, that the problems that we as people who are blind and visually impaired face are unique, and therefore we need people specially trained in those areas and specially dedicated to those areas to teach us. And I think the same could be said for the computer science realm, that obviously 2 hours or 4 hours out of a 5-day seminar isn't enough and is unfair to people who are going thinking they're going to learn something about training people who are blind and visually impaired. So I would say that we need a certification process, but we need to start from scratch. We need to determine who's going to do it and how can we make sure that people who are teaching those of us who are blind and visually impaired really do know whereof they speak and can really teach us in a way that will build a foundation upon which we can learn.
Thanks very much, Debbie. We actually have a number of people who are computer users. from Kansas, Janelle Edwards, is actually a computer person who has worked in programming and who has obviously had to learn to use computers as a blind person. Janelle, should we have certification? And if we should, ought it to be a kind of a pre-service program through a university? Tell us what you think.
Well, I am one of these computer people by training, yes, and I just as far as my nice orderly world, the way I like it, it would be nice because then you could complete the course and get the certification, and just like I have the degrees on my resume, I could show it to the employer, and yes, I've completed this course, and it would make it easier to convince people than what I'm trying to do now, than saying, well, the Voc Rehab Center showed me how to do this stuff, and I've done this other stuff on the job for years, and as far as trying to convince people that I would be qualified to be an assistive technology trainer, going out into the workforce, that would be helpful in the job search. And so in that sense, it would make it easier for me as a job applicant. As far as actually the quality of the services for people, as far as Debbie's concerns, I tend to think would tend to defer to Brian's opinions and want to listen and learn. And then certainly the certification, it seems like, would need to be updated, because as quickly as technology changes, you can learn it now, and so quickly what you've learned becomes out of date that I don't know if one would have to be recertified, or I would be curious what Brian thinks about that, how often people would have to be recertified.
Brian, we've talked some then about the idea of university certification as a possibility, and we've commented on the fact that most of the rehab engineering programs that are available either online through places like Kansas State or Arizona State or some other universities throughout the country are not blindness specific. On the other hand, there are online training programs such as those operated by the Access Technology Institute, which are specific to blindness training. And one of the questions becomes, are folks like Access Technology Institute sufficient to demonstrate real competency in training and sufficient to be recognized around the country? And perhaps as well, while you're talking about that, are certifications in things like JAWS scripting or advanced window eyes capacity relevant as part of the certification effort?
The American Foundation for the Blind, in cooperation with AER, has undertaken a multi-year examination of what it would take to be certified as an AT specialist. And we talked about dividing that definition into several different layers. One layer would be an individual who is capable of going in and doing installs. That might be a little more akin to the idea of a technician, if you will. They know the mechanics of it, but you wouldn't want them to teach you anything necessarily, and they're very comfortable being the mechanic of the process. The next group might be individuals who are capable of doing setup. These would be more the engineer types who go in and do the configuring of JAWS and the creation of set files in Window Eyes and modifications of systems beyond the straightforward installation and operating system type of configuring. And then the third group would be the trainers, the individuals who, while they may not be able to go in and do a job site evaluation, they're the kind of people you want to learn Window Eyes from, or JAWS, or ZoomText, or any of the other access technologies associated with mainstream applications like the Office Suite or Lotus Notes or whatever. So we thought maybe you would divide the things up to make it a little bit more palatable by dividing it into that technician, engineer, trainer kind of scenario. And then you'd move on and further say, well, in the case of any of these things, there are those people who are really spectacular at speech stuff. Do you want to disqualify all blind and visually impaired persons because they're not comfortable with or they haven't built into these screen magnification programs all the bells and whistles necessary for them to do all the configuring and training, etc., independently? Or do you want to say that within that you might give an endorsement, if you will, for speech technology, or an endorsement for large print or braille or scanners or whatever? You might have a series of endorsements on top of the, so to speak, certificate that indicates that you're capable of one of these three levels of interaction with adaptive technology. And what AFB and the others came up with is the idea that we really need to focus on the exam, the process by which an individual would go in and sit for an exam on these issues. And that exam would have to be comprised both of typical questions, but also a demonstration process where an individual who's qualified, here we go, the chicken and the egg scenario, to evaluate an individual's ability to communicate the information that they're able to put down on paper, to also do that in an oral kind of fashion, in a teaching kind of fashion, if you will. And we came up with some draft ideas on all of this. Debbie Cook from Washington State was very much involved in the draft, as were people like Jim Allen of Texas School for the Blind and others. And we did a couple of test drives of it, and it looks like there's some potential there. But it still leaves that first part of the game. Where does one get the instruction? And should the instruction teach to the idea of passing the certification? And I think it probably ought to, which is significantly different than what the Access Technology Institute does, or for that matter, what I do at the Carroll Center for the Blind in our carrolltech.org distance learning training program.
Brian, we've talked some about that kind of certification, and Carrie, I'll respond to you in just a second. Hang loose. Carrie sent a text message. One of the cool things about Tuesday topics is that we operate in an iVocalize chat room, and one of the abilities that iVocalize has, in addition to being able to talk back and forth when mics work properly, is we have the ability to send back and forth text messages. And Carrie was asking whether there is in fact a way for him to register, or her, because Carrie could be either, for this course online. And the answer, Carrie, is it's not a course, it's Tuesday Topics, and you're more than welcome to join us every Tuesday at 9 o'clock. It isn't really a course, it's just an opportunity for us to get together and discuss some issues that relate to blindness. Brian, it seems to me that one of the things you're suggesting is that the exam wouldn't care very much where somebody had gotten its training from. And the issue is simply being able to demonstrate an ability to understand and respond to questions about blindness-related access technology, and at the same time be able to show a capacity for being able to convey material to someone in a training mode. And perhaps that is the best way, but let me ask another question. For a person to get, for example, a speech endorsement, would it be sufficient for that person to be absolutely hellacious with JAWS, or would that person have to demonstrate an understanding of more than one screen reader?
In our discussion, we were always using things in twos. For there to be a consumer choice, you have to have at least two things to choose from. So to receive an endorsement in speech technology, you would have to be able to demonstrate a significant understanding of two screen readers, a large print endorsement, two screen magnifiers. A braille endorsement, you not only have to understand the nature nature of Braille translators, but also Braille embossers and Braille displays. For scanners, you would have to also have the ability to demonstrate and train people in the use of both, say, Kurzweil and Open Book, though, again, I'm only saying two products, not which two products in that process. And do so, and the testing would, by definition, I think, have to take into consideration questions on an equal basis between the two that the individual indicates are going to be their choice. Just like a music student may have to choose two instruments and be tested on those instruments, an individual seeking endorsement in a particular modality would have to indicate which two speech programs, large language programs, et cetera, they plan on being tested on.
Thanks, Brian. Let me see if someone else can jump in here, because I have a question. It's easy for Brian and I to talk about what endorsements consist of, but it's a much more general question, and one that ought to be answered not by us techies, perhaps, but by more general folks within the system. What are the qualities that an access technology teacher needs to have in order to be a good access technology teacher? And what are the qualities that make for a bad access technology teacher? Who wants to jump in on that one?
Well, speaking as somebody who learns computers by listening to somebody, taking copious notes, and then just practicing till I get it right, I feel more comfortable with a person who can simplify things and put them in a step-by-step-by-step format. And that is very important to me. And while I have the floor, one of the things that I'd like, Paul, for you and Brian to discuss is why we couldn't have the same sort of certification for technology specialists that we have, say, for vision teachers, where they complete an initial program and then continue to update their knowledge and their skill level, many times not by attending college courses anymore, but by doing in-service training and that kind of thing to update their portfolio. So it seems to me that if you had a person who was good at technology, who completed basic steps of certification to address Janelle's issues, there would be like a yearly update or something that they would have to show that they knew. But I think that the primary purpose of a teacher has to be to meet the needs of people where they are, and that is to make technology a friendly experience and to show them that even at the beginning of the process, they can accomplish something, whether it's word processing a simple letter or doing something simple like this, like coming on this room and talking on the microphone. So that's what I think.
All right. Ms. Janelle, would you like to try? Tell us what kinds of qualities an access technology instructor ought to have to be a good one.
I agree with Debbie that that's a very important thing, step by step, and also keeping current with the technology because it does change so fast, and even doing it on a yearly basis with the updates that, say, WindowEyes and JAWS can do, depending on when you had your yearly updates, you could still be quite a ways behind. So I'm glad you two will be returning to those recertification issues or whatever you would be calling it, but those are the two that I would mention.
Thanks, Janelle. It really is sort of sad. Gary's been participating with us Tuesday after Tuesday, and he's lurking in the background, but for some reason we can't hear him. So we're very sorry for that, Gary. I'll give you another shot at it in a few minutes, see if the atmosphere has brightened. So to return to the question that Debbie raised in her last discussion, why couldn't we follow a model that's similar to vision teachers, that is pre-service training and then in-service training on a regular basis? Well, I think that that's kind of the idea. The difficulty is that at the moment, I don't think that I know of a pre-service program except perhaps, and Brian, maybe you can comment on this, except perhaps for one that's supposed to exist in Indiana, that actually provides the real hands-on training in blindness-specific access technology that our folks would really need. Because I don't think a pre-service program in rehab engineering, such as those that exist at several universities all over the country, really does our trainers much good. But let's hear your comments, Brian, on Debbie's question. Gary, your mic is still not working. Brian, go ahead and respond to Debbie's question, if you would.
Debbie, there's a couple of things that come to mind here. One is that whenever I hire a trainer, I'm looking for them to have really two qualities. The ability to teach step by step, as you've described, I think that's an important ability to have, which requires a kind of patience that's different and very difficult for a technologist who's well-versed in technology to maintain. So first, that ability to teach step by step. And secondly, the ability to teach by concept. That is the ability to say, here is a dialogue box. As with all dialogue boxes, it consists of a series of controls. These controls include such things as radio buttons, check boxes, edit boxes, combo boxes, list boxes, etc., etc., and can define all of those things in a conceptual way so that once we teach an individual about the concept of dialogue box, we can move them from Word into Excel and say, this is the Excel format dialog box. What do you expect this dialog box to contain, and how would you control those controls, if you will, within that dialog box? That's a conceptual trainer. So we have step-by-step training, we have conceptual training, and most importantly, we have trainers who can move between these two means of training depending on how successful they're being with this particular student in that process. As for keeping current, that's an issue as well for me, because in adaptive technology, things change not only in terms of the access technology, but in the technologies that that access technology is trying to gain you access to, and the operating system as well that's part of it. So we have those three things all changing at the same time. And as we tech trainers discussed it and tech managers discussed it, we decided that probably an individual to keep up his or her certification ought to go through a recertification process. And that process might be by portfolio, as you described it. That is, show me you've attended conferences. Show me you've taken classes. That kind of thing, rather than continuous testing as part of it. And build that portfolio as a way to do the in-service that you're describing also would fall into that portfolio approach. I think the biggest problem in us technologists taking on the same kind of process that rehab teaching, O&M instruction, rehab counselors, etc., have engaged in is there's simply not enough power to go around. Teachers of visually impaired children, there are fewer and fewer of them every year. O&M instructors getting harder and harder to obtain an individual to teach orientation and mobility. About the only thing that seems to be growing is counselors, because we forced the rehab system into requiring that all counselors have a master's level degree. And that's forced individuals who were already in there not to be grandfathered, but to have to go through the process of getting a master's degree while working, and heavily subsidized by the rehab system at the same time. So I would say that the issue here is we're trying to create a true profession of access technologists. At the same time, all of the other professions in the field of blindness are struggling to stay afloat in their own right. So we need to come up with some different way to do it. I think that one of those ways might be to take access technology, train the trainer, as an online function. combine that with testing and combine the testing with some demonstration projects that can be associated with the major conferences that we attend, like CSUN and Closing the Gap and ATIA and the like, tag on a one-day certifying day where individuals can take the face-to-face, demonstrate it to me in real time kind of process. It may not be an expensive thing, but somebody's got to step up to the plate to pay for it.
Brian, I want to cross T's and dot I's here. The other question that that I had asked you is whether you know of any in-service training program that is blindness-specific in the country at this time. And I had thought that there was a program at the community college level that was providing kind of access tech training specific to blindness somewhere in Indiana. Am I correct? Hello, Brian.
There, I got the mic. I'm not aware of the one that's in Indiana, to be honest with you. I kind of watch those kind of things, but unless it really glared and said, we're proud to be the place where one can come for adaptive technology training and for blind and visually impaired individuals, I probably wouldn't have heard about it in the snowstorm of FYI email.
Actually, I lied, Brian. It's not in Indiana. It's in Wisconsin. It's in Wisconsin. Does that help any? Or if even if there isn't one that you know about in Wisconsin, do you know of any specific training that leads to some semblance of supposed certification, except for the ATI process that's operated through Access Technology Institute?
What used to be the Arkansas Enterprises for the Blind, I think they're called Lions World, does offer a very few slots each year that's intended to be a train-the-trainer kind of scenario on a all-blindness, cross-modality basis. I've yet to meet anybody who's passed all the way through it. It is one of those 9 to 12 month type go there, live there kind of trainings. And they have incorporated into that Microsoft Office Suite certification as part of it.
Thanks, Brian. So we've got some idea of what sort of qualities a teacher ought to have. We've got some picture of what certification for access technology might look like. So that brings us to another question, and that is, what makes agencies who like to spend as little as they possibly can spend the money to hire somebody who's certified? Let me open that to the floor and see who wants to jump in.
This is Debbie Grubb again from Bradenton, Florida. It seems to me, and I remember well what Brian said early on in this Tuesday topics about the cost, both in time, effort, and money to become certified. But it seems to me that rehab agencies would be better off to hire someone with certification that means something, because they would get better bang for their buck. They would know that the person who is teaching their clients would have the qualities that we've talked about to be able to do concept teaching and step-by-step teaching. And I think one of the great things about step-by-step teaching and concept teaching is, even with me, as hands-on as I tend to be, I can kind of pick up and say, oh, that's like something else I learned back there. And the more I learn, even the more I'm able to pick up on concepts. So I think if you've got a teacher, they can do those two modalities and that can meet these requirements, it seems to me that rehab agencies would be better off, better served, and their money would be better spent, because they could be sure of the quality of training that their clients were going to get. Or at least, let me qualify, more sure than just hiring somebody out of the box who has a reputation for knowing a lot about technology.
Janelle, any thoughts?
I think that Debbie expressed it very well, and people can get substandard training, and people applying for jobs can have a hard time trying to present their credentials, and so it can just help on both sides. But yes, there can be very substandard training in the centers that I felt like I received good training, but how do those people really know when someone is applying?
Let me ask Brian what you think, Brian, about the idea of what things cause people to go after appropriate certification. What causes agencies to hire certified folks?
I think for the most part is because they're federally mandated to do so. Certainly universities, rehab agencies were hiring what you and I might consider unqualified people and calling them counselors who just had, say, a bachelor's degree in biology or something, because their state only required that they have a four-year college degree, and it didn't necessarily have to be in a related field. So if you did well in the interview, bingo bango, you were a counselor. I didn't mind them being counselors. I just minded them having any kind of effect over my life, in as much as all of the studies indicate that a counselor is, the nature of your counselor is a major difference between successful rehab and not successful rehab. Not how much money is spent on the individual, but the quality of that counseling experience. It tends to be much more the stick than the carrot that gets agencies to do things a particular way. A federal mandate to do it would cause it to happen. But there's some reality in all of this. For 1 week's worth of training, approximately 25 hours, it cost my agency $2,100 to provide that. Our state agency, however, has entered into a contract where they expect that the rehab agency, the not-for-profit I work for, is going to make up the difference between $1,372 and that $2,100. So we have to come up with an extra somewhere around $800 per week over the course of the year to make up that difference per student. And it's a serious, serious problem. And that is in spite of the fact that I would say we are not by any means paying top dollar professional fees. If I have an individual who has her master's in a special ed instructor, TBI, and she's earning less now after working for me for 6 years than she did when she tried for 1 year to be a TBI and decided she didn't want to spend so much time on the road. If you can't get paid enough, then you've got to have another motivation to be there and doing it. And the state agency is not very anxious to pay more per hour to do it. In spite of, and I think you're right here, Debbie, that if they would just pay a higher rate for a more qualified individual, I believe that in the long run they could look at the stats and see that they're having to spend less money on retraining the same individual later down the line.
There are some states, and I guess some agencies, I would assume the Carroll Center is one, that really does make a pretty careful effort to evaluate the folks that they hire in terms of assessing their skills. In the state of Virginia and under development in the state of Florida, there are competencies that people who are being considered for employment as access tech trainers will have to demonstrate. I know in Virginia there actually is some testing that happens. Brian, do you know of other states where this kind of system is already in place, where people are expected to demonstrate some specific competencies before they'll be qualified to be considered as access tech trainers?
Texas has a quite stringent system with respect to being hired by the state as state employees to provide this kind of service. Where the system tends to break down, and I'm not sure that it breaks down specifically in Texas, is when the agency hires outside of state service. They may hire, you know, Brian's computer tech buddies, corporation to provide the training. And then they don't make those individuals jump through the hoops quite the way they do as if they were being hired into state service directly. And we all know that the last thing a state wants to do is increase the number of individuals who are state employees. They'd rather outsource it as part of that process.
It's an interesting idea, though. There have certainly been some instances over the past 20 years where outsourced training has happened. And I think many of us would argue that outsourced training has been sometimes not very successful. And I'm thinking in particular of the IRS and the Social Security Administration, who actually contracted with some firms to do training of potential new employees often the feedback that those of us in the consumer blindness movement have received was that the training that was provided by contractors wasn't very good. On the other hand, there's certainly an argument to be made to say that if you set up a large corporation nationally who really looked at training its personnel and who really looked at providing a high standard of both services and training, it actually might be a pretty appropriate way of delivering training, particularly in small states. So it's interesting. Brian, maybe you should quit at the Carroll Center and form the National Training Administration for Access Technology and become a millionaire.
I wish there were big bucks in it. I know of several people, including myself, who were hired by some of these companies either directly or through our agencies to provide some of that training. And I heard the same kind of talk among those who received that training, some concern about the quality of the training. I can tell you, having been one of those trainers, that it was the most frustrating kind of training you can ever ask to give. Somebody else writes the curriculum. You're expected to get through that curriculum in the time set aside for that purpose, whether or not the individual is picking up on item A. You must move on to B at precisely 3:42 in the afternoon and move right along. You get there and find out that individuals, the powers that be, so to speak, have failed to give all the tools necessary to make it happen, in spite of the fact that the curriculum said they were there, they weren't necessarily there. And the list goes on and on in that fashion. So it's a difficult, difficult thing to be in. I do think, for example, I was speaking with the head of the technology program at the Cleveland Site Center, this called the Store Center, the computer department there, and we were talking about the issue of certification. They want to go to the school systems in the greater Cleveland area and sign a contract to provide adaptive technology training to the students in that area, and also to provide the adaptive tech, by the way, on a lease kind of scenario. And they believe that before they can get an educational body to hire them, that they need to have individuals who have, as they put it, letters after their name that indicate that they are certified and educated to do the tasks that they're being hired to do. So they're kind of between a rock and a hard place, trying to woo this new, if you will, business model of potential customers, at the same time trying to get quality people in there and certified in a universe where there is no certification as such. And these are some pretty high quality people like Randy Knapp, who is going to have to be managing that kind of activity. And in spite of his probably 22, 25 years in the business, hasn't got any letters after his name, as his boss puts it.
I've, for the past 12 years, both taught and supervised an access tech training program that is specifically designed for those who use visually impaired software, that is a 16-week program taught at a community college. But it's intended for students, and there's no real attempt to make it the precursor to any certification. And there's certainly not a component within my program that speaks to how you teach access technology. I've also run a course for Florida International University to try to train vision teachers in access technology. It was a 16-week course, 2 nights a week, 3 hours a night. Did include some components on how access technology ought to be taught. But my experience teaching that course, whereas I had expectations about being able to cover a fairly large curriculum of information with regard to access technology, I was forced to absolutely regroup because of the number of vision teachers enrolled in that program whose knowledge was virtually zero, even though they had been given equipment and they were charged with the job of teaching blind and visually impaired young people how to use access technology. Within the second week, I had to virtually completely rewrite the curriculum and make it a much more elementary course than it had been my initial intention, because my expectation was that dealing with folks who, for the most part, had master's degrees, I would be dealing with people who had a readiness to move at a fairly fast pace. What emerged during that training program was that it doesn't matter how many degrees you have, you can still be computer phobic, and many of them were.
kind of an interesting point. Can you hear me now, or are you copy?
Terry, you're coming through loud and clear.
I thought that maybe certification sounds like a good idea. I think that they need the training to teach blind people. But I think that from what I could hear, everybody had some good thoughts about it. Problem is sometimes, you know, you call tech support if you got a problem with your computer, and sometimes the tech support people that should know, sometimes they don't really know how to solve the problem a lot of them.
I think that's a good point. Though it's interesting that might in fact represent one of the places where access tech trainers ought to come from. But it's an interesting issue. Should blind people expect as much from tech support? And should people in tech support have some of the qualities of trainers? Should in fact people who really function as tech support folks actually be certified as access tech teachers? What do you think, Brian?
You know, there over the course of the years have been many people who held jobs that I said, God, I wish I could have that job. Wouldn't that be a great job? There are two that I would never, never, never want to be. One is a customer service representative for an AT company. Clearly, there are a lot of people out there who buy this rather sophisticated hardware and software, and not only are they guilty of what everybody else is guilty of, not opening the manual and reading it, but simply dial 1-800 tech support for everything, but they're a highly untrained lot of people calling you, and you have to be everybody's answer to every question. And I just can't imagine having such a job. I know that they create a knowledge base that they refer back to so that they're not having to go by only their own knowledge, but rather the collective knowledge of the entire department. But I'm here to tell you that there are just so many wrinkles in that I'm glad I don't have the job. Sure, let's let them be certified technicians or certified instructors at the same time. But my guess is they don't pay that well in that regard to draw somebody into going through that whole process and then sit in there. As I talked about people who are trainers in mainstream, they're earning $75,000 and up doing that. My staff are paid half that. Yes, those other individuals are certified to get there, and corporate employers are not going to hire companies whose staff are not certified in what it is that they've just paid serious bucks to have them teach their employees. But it's nonetheless a big issue. The other one, by the way, I wouldn't do is TBI. Talk about another thankless job where you're expected to be everything to everybody all the time. Everything from how to create adaptive maps with glue guns to how to configure JAWS for a new CD-ROM title they're using in the classroom. I'm glad it's not my job. I respect them immensely as a general class. But I agree with you, Paul, that there's a great percentage of TVIs who are undertrained and computer phobic.
Yeah, that would be kind of tough to have a job like that. I'm sure you mean that to have to answer all the questions that everybody has. But the thing about people having a certification in technical training, I mean, maybe another point, I suppose, is that maybe a good person who is technically oriented knows the ins and outs of everything that they're training experts. Maybe they may be expert in some of those skills, but maybe not in the human skills of interaction with the teaching students and everything.
Yep, I agree, Gary. Well, we are approaching the time when our discussion of certification of access tech is going to wind down. So let me go around and ask people if they have any final thoughts or any feelings about perhaps where we need to go from here and what we, as perhaps the American Council of the Blind, can do to encourage more certification of access tech. So let me throw for some final comments the mic over to Janelle in Kansas.
Hi, Paul. This has certainly been very interesting and informative. And what can ACB do to encourage this? That's a challenging question. We can get by behind it with resolutions and with letters to people and that sort of thing. And with our membership supporting initiatives individually, I guess is another thing that occurs to me with supporting these things with our state agencies and just individually with our specific places where we may have influence. But I guess I'm not really coming up with great ideas at the moment, but I will love to hear your ideas. And I guess on our last topic, I would just quickly say that the screen reader that I've worked with the most, WindowEyes of GW Micro, that I have found their tech support to be very people-friendly and be able to either express things in very tech-like terms or very simple terms, depending on the situation and the person, and just very personable and friendly and knowledgeable and excellent technology people in their tech support department. And so I know that isn't always the case with all the technology people that we work with out there, but I think that there certainly are a number of them that are that way, and we just always need to remember to say thank you when we do come across them.
We also probably need to ask people like the AFB Tech Center to incorporate some measures of tech support. Every other computer magazine for virtually every other product in the known universe measures tech support as one of the characteristics by which they judge the quality of a product. And if tech support is not appropriate, then it lowers the rating of the product. And I think that we need to ask perhaps AFB Center to give that some thought in the ratings that they make of products that are out there. Ms. Grubb.
Well, you stole my first piece of thunder when you talked about the tech support just a second ago, so I'll move on from that and say that I still believe, after all of our very interesting and intelligent and very thought-provoking discussion, that there needs to be some form of certification for technology teachers. And I think what ACB can do, we have a very wonderful relationship with AFB and Mr. Carl Augusto, and it sounds to me from what Brian and Janelle have said that there is an embryo of a process that AFB has come up with, and I think that we should work with AFB and, if possible, bring NFB into the mix too, to come up with a process of certification that then people can plug into. I think one of the reasons we don't have certification, and one of the reasons that rehab agencies take their buddies or, you know, Ed Norton because they think he knows something about computer technology, is that there isn't a process in place. And if we came up with a process and showed how it could work, I think that rehab agencies would embrace it. I really do. So I think we should come across with, as Janelle said, the letters and the resolutions, but I also think we should work with AFB to formalize and grow the embryo program that they have obviously already started.
Cool. Gary, final thoughts for this evening and perhaps a role for the consumer organization.
Well, yeah, I think that there probably should be some certification regarding technical training and things of that nature. But also, I suppose the ACB and NFB should both be involved in it. And I think that's probably the way it should go. And I think that it's been an interesting discussion, but it'll be quite a challenge to be able to see how this works itself out.
Thanks, Gary. It's interesting. You hung in the session for just long enough, Gary. The interesting thing that we really haven't talked about very much tonight, and perhaps, Brian, in your final go-round, you can discuss it, is that one of the models that's certainly out there is the NFB's National Technology Center, where a consumer organization actually sets itself up as well as a primary area for the provision of training and conceivably in the long run of certification as access technology instructors. We certainly haven't seen this come full blown, but is a consumer organization an appropriate way for access technology certification to happen, Brian? And At the same time, as you're talking about that, tell us what else consumer organizations can do and give us some final thoughts.
I have to tell you that I'm very uncomfortable with this crossover between being a consumer organization advocating for a particular set of standards and services and the like, and one purporting to provide it. That crossover between consumer and provider, I think, is an unfortunate set of circumstances for all of us. Because it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, what kind of good training is there? According to NFB, it's training provided by NFB. All other training that isn't NFB training, therefore, by definition, is not good training, and it's a serious problem for me. So I much prefer separation of consumer and provider in that fashion, in the same way I support separation of church and state. Whenever you're in the market for adaptive technology training, ask the individual you're hiring, the company you're hiring, or the agency who's providing it, what credentials your instructor brings to the table so that you can make an informed choice as to whether to accept training from that source, from that individual at this time. Consumer choice has to be something where you ask each and every time. People who complain because restaurants don't have Braille menus make the assumption whenever they go to a restaurant that it's not going to have a Braille menu. I walk into every restaurant and ask for their Braille menu. And if one's not available, I ask to speak to the manager and say, I come to your restaurant and I'd really appreciate a Braille menu. I'd like to inform you about thus and such organization that provides Braille menu production. Occasionally I carry around a couple of business cards in my wallet for such organizations so that the next time I go to that restaurant, they'll say, oh, I'm sorry, we don't have one. I'm going to say, I would like to speak to your manager again because I gave them the contacts to do that. I think that if we put pressure in that fashion, everywhere and anywhere, if decision makers are asked the question, then they're going to turn around and say, you know, I didn't feel very good not being able to answer that question. So let's get that information. I think we can have some impact that way.
Ladies and gentlemen, that sort of brings us to the end of our Tuesday topics for tonight. I guess my final thoughts are that this is a complex issue, with not a lot of firm answers at this point, but perhaps the beginnings of some solutions. My response in terms of what consumer organizations can do is to demand that legislation begin to recognize access technology trainers as a different class of animal within governmental ladders, probably at the same level as we've already been forced to recognize network technologists. These people, in spite of the fact that they may not always have degrees, but have certifications in networking and various other elements, are actually paid at the higher end of the spectrum in terms of people with marketable and skills that are in short supply. And it seems to me that as a consumer organization, we need to put pressure on our agencies and put pressure on our legislatures to create job positions that will encourage people with the ability to actually acquire some certifications and some demonstrable skills that can be tested for on the assumption that they will get paid enough to justify the expenditure of time and effort. So once more, ladies and gentlemen, we've come to the end of our Tuesday topics for this evening. And I'd like to thank everyone who's listened in, as well as those who've participated in our Tuesday topics for this evening. Thank you very much, everyone. Next week on Tuesday Topics, we will be returning to a subject that we discussed when Tuesday Topics was just being born. That is, to the subject of audio description. We'll try to explore what audio-described movies are now available in movie theaters, what kind of legislative role there might be for states to take in making audio description more widely available in theaters, how we can make DVDs accessible to blind and visually impaired folks and include audio description on them, and what other new developments there are in making audio description available both on DVDs, on more video cassettes, in more movie theaters, and on television. I hope you'll all join us when audio description becomes our next Tuesday topic.